Have you ever been on a team where the coach and assistant coaches, everybody can just kind of have, at camp we used to call it a bitch session. Look, let's hug it out. Let's really just talk and say, forget the formalities.
Mm-hmm.
Check your ego at the door.
Let's air some grievances.
And sit down and let's be real about it.
The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Everybody involved just kind of needs a bitch session at this point, where you need to sit around and just be like, hey, this is my problem with how you're calling the plays. This is my problem with when I'm getting them.
You couldn't smooth a silk sheet if you had a hot date with a babe.
I lost my train of thought.
We're going to put Frank down this week, so I'll go ahead and get that out of the way.
What do you do with interior linemen after you put them down? Do they turn into glue?
I don't know.
Is there another use?
You sell them off for parts? I don't know. You harvest their still working organs?
Dan, I think you're really underestimating the broad sexual appeal that I have.
Yeah, we apparently shouldn't do that. Charge doesn't like it when you underestimate his broad sexual appeal.
When Charge gets that feeling, he needs.
I think you're really underestimating the broad sexual appeal that I have.
Yeah, we need to stop doing that, I think.
Feeling. So a comp just sort of exploded into my mind here.
Ooh, mind explosions early on a Friday.
Yes. Jerry Stiller and John Lovitz. Like, Jerry Stiller can just kind of make any term or any phrase sound funny with his delivery. And it's a very singular sort of delivery, but he can make anything hilarious just by the way he said it. There's a lot of John Lovitz in there. Well, I don't know that John Lovitz in kind of full monologue form is the most hilarious person, but just for little quips and terms and phrases, he is super funny just with a quick turn of phrase.
Some people say things in a way that makes them sound funny, and it's hard to quantify exactly why that is.
Jerry, it's Frankenstein. The Steinbrenner's here. George is dead. Call me back.
That's all it took.
That is Anthony Herron. I'm Dan Bernstein here on Sports Radio 670. This will be the last of the preview shows for before the debut on Monday, on our Football Monday. Bernstein and Harris gets going.
Harris. With an S.
Harris.
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 The other tall, bald, black.
There's
a different one.
Oh, no.
We're switching roles here. Harris.
But do people confuse one for the other?
No, I get
like
Jared
Payton. The people who think Herb Lawrence and Lawrence Holmes are the same person.
Right, yeah.
Like, no. No, they're not. Please, you're showing your ass on some of this stuff.
I'll occasionally get a Jared Payton out there. But the name thing, the Harris, Herron, I think so far we've done well. That's probably going to become an issue that he's going to be here at the station every day. But really excited for Monday when Marshall's here.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome stuff. And looking forward to it, and looking forward to our Layla Rahimi Wednesdays continuing, as well as the new revamped score lineup hits its stride and what we hope is a victory Football Monday. I don't know if it's going to be. We've got Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell doing their things. J.B. Long at 11, Sam Panjatovic, Sammy P. at 11:25, High Noon at 11:45, Kevin Fishbane at noon.
Studz Fishy Business
has put together.
Let's go.
Yeah, you coined that. Studs has put together the solid wall of sound to get you ready for Bears at 12:25. That is, he puts together the solid wall, and then the idea is we want to run through it.
Okay.
After we hear everything, that we're all coached up and ready to go.
Who's
what
more?
What if I made the wall of metal?
Ooh, it'd be difficult.
Ooh,
or at least a helmet. A helmet with one of the additional pads on there.
When you say metal, like theoretical, make it out of metal, or do you mean instead of the classic NFL music that we have like Mastodon underneath it?
All right, well, that's an idea now for the future.
The solid wall of metal?
The solid wall of AC/DC.
That's not really metal.
It's not?
No.
No, that's not metal.
That's hard rock.
Oh, I guess I'm conflating the two then. I don't know how metal is
Anthony,
different from
this,
hard rock.
This is metal.
Sounds like hard rock to me.
No, that's metal.
That's metal.
Okay.
That's speed metal.
Do we have an example of hard rock available?
Well, yeah. Because, like Back in Black or Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap. That's hard rock.
So metal is more of like a drum kit lead, whereas hard rock is more of a guitar riff lead. Is that kind of the
metal is mathier.
Okay.
metal has got a lot more very specific, the stops and the way the sound is processed.
Okay.
Be a little different.
It's metal's like a little more staccato,
more
with
upbeat.
It. Okay.
Yeah, upbeat.
It's all it's right. Usually faster.
Like this. That's like the extreme of it.
I'm hearing more drum. I'm hearing more subwoofer to the drum kit. And
the drums are a lot more frontal in metal, for sure.
So very, very prominent
drum
kit.
You can't have a good metal band without a great drummer.
All right.
You have to have a great drummer.
All right. I didn't know the distinction. I've always just put metal and hard rock in the exact same category.
No, but like classic Van Halen is hard rock.
And like metal.
With Van Halen, you wouldn't know they had a drummer until he gets a solo.
Metal is
dude, hey. That is,
I see.
Don't, oh no 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 no! There will be no Alex Van Halen slander.
I see a bunch of hair.
That guy's got the hammer. No, no. Say what you want about Brad Pitt.
Give him a solo.
Have you heard "Hot for Teacher"?
I have. Yeah.
Okay, you know what?
But it's more guitar than it is drum, though.
No, it's not.
"Hot for Teacher" is a lot more Hot guitar than drum.
Oh, dude. Anthony. "Hot for Teacher" is a great drum part. It's both.
But that song, that song is an important song because of what the drums did.
I'm not saying the drums aren't important, but by comparison, because I'm trying to understand this comparison you're drawing here, it sounds to me like metal is more guitar lead, is more drum lead. Hard rock is more guitar lead. If we're just going to simplify for the folks who don't know the difference, I think that sounds like the difference you're describing. The difference between metal and hard rock, is that a commonly sort of known thing
This is the best, easier way to explain it.
Okay.
Metal is hard rock. Not all hard rock is metal. All right. Metal is a subset of hard rock, which is kind of taking hard rock to the extreme. The drums are more front-facing because of the way the songs are structured. The strong songs are usually more complex. The guitars are usually have a different amplification.
Sure.
There's a little more bass to it.
And there's often phantasmagoric imagery associated with it. There are some bands who traffic in both. I would say Rush is an example of a band. Like, if you, Working Man by Rush.
Dream Theater, another one.
Yeah, Working Man by Rush has some actual metal in it.
So I'm
some metal sensibilities,
so
but they're
Kiss?
Not a metal band.
Kiss is metal?
Kiss is glam rock.
Okay.
Yeah. Rush is like
is that just because
rock.
Of their look or their sound,
all
too?
Of it. Well, they're schlocky. Kiss is very uncomplicated, major chord, glam schlock.
Okay.
That's what Kiss is.
All right. Where does punk fall in?
Punk is another subgenre of hard rock.
Okay, so it's all hard rock. Metal is just one of the subsets of hard rock.
Yes, a large and influential subset of hard rock.
So there's metal, there's punk.
Or you can even think of it like this: Led Zeppelin is the first heavy metal band for the most part.
Correct.
Okay.
They basically invented heavy metal.
Well, so, no, they stole it.
They
stole blues songs.
Blues songs and made them.
They took blues songs and they made them louder. They were at 10, and then this goes to 11, and that they are the metal band.
Okay. All right.
Even with and the imagery and all that and the stuff they did with Gollum and the Hobbit and all that goofy stuff. Okay. And then that took off.
All right.
And then, you know, Judas Priest started with the leather because Rob Halford was hanging out with.
Like I sent you the video of the dude trying to body slam my subwoofer.
Yeah, what was that?
It bothered me. It vexed me. I was terribly vexed when I saw that video.
You should be vexed if a guy's delivering.
Are you Sunday Night Football right now? What are you doing? That's electronics. I'm going to need to use that thing.
And he just dumps it on your porch.
Yeah, so the way it was described to me is the role of the subwoofer is to deliver the additional bass and doing the surround speakers in different places and all that. So we're kind of working on the setup for the basement area, and that subwoofer is supposed to be, I guess, essentially then for a metal band, for a metal delivery, the subwoofer would be a big deal. Like, you know, the bass in rap music, then the subwoofer is a big deal for that. So from a rock perspective, a metal band,
anything,
the subwoofer is a very big deal.
You could use a subwoofer listening to classical music if you want a full range of sound.
Or if you're going to listen to, like, the brass and the bass.
Everything. Yeah, and especially if you've got everything equalized properly and
the subwoofer
likes.
Listening to violins or something, do I?
Well, maybe the bass. not necessarily a violin,
yeah.
But if you're listening to kettle drums right. and bass, mm-hmm. of course you need like you need the
flutes and clarinets.
Well, that really would be on the higher end,
right?
But but on the full range, when
you
of
go to the low end of the range, the subwoofer is a big deal.
Yes, and I don't own. Well, actually, you know what? I've got that cool Sonos mm-hmm. soundbar that I'm not allowed to
Tomato.
Turn.
Yeah.
I can't really turn it up late at night watching like
to 11?
Mad Max just
at all.
Oh, because okay. If Mad Max Fury Road comes on, and I'm alone in the house, the windows are going to be shaking.
You got to do that with Oppenheimer now.
I haven't seen Oppenheimer.
Oh, your house will just crumble into pieces if you turn the bass up on Oppenheimer.
The Trinity test might actually crumble your house.
Really? Any Christopher Nolan movie, pretty much. Apparently, Nolan's a big subwoofer guy, is what I'm getting. Now that I'm learning about speakers and now apparently learning about Hard Rock, Christopher Nolan seems to be a big subwoofer guy, is the sense I'm getting from all his movies.
So that's Anthony Herron, and I'm Dan Bernstein. And do we have time?
Are we going to talk?
Yeah, we are going to talk, Barrett. Do we have time to play the Mercedes Lewis cut about the leadership council and what the OGs are telling their offensive coordinator? Because this sounds to me it has nothing to do with play calling.
I say we break, come back and reset, and then we can get into the full thing.
Okay. I got a lot to consume here with all this metal versus punk versus everything else.
But just, I can't believe you said what you said about Alex Van Halen. One of the great rock drummers.
It's just more of a guitar lead.
No, it's not all the time.
I didn't say all the time, but when I hear that song, I see hair and I hear guitar, and then everyone else shuts up and the drum gets its turn.
All right, see, the start of Hot for Teacher is Eddie Van Halen's Lamborghini. No, it's not. It's his brother on the drums sounding like a Harley engine. Listen.
That's all drums.
You see how no one else is getting in the way?
This is one person.
With six arms. Okay, now it's an octopus.
This is still one person. Now, there's the guitar.
Now they're like, shut up, guitar's turn.
Well, they did, but he doesn't shut up. He keeps playing, and that's the point. And no, that's not a Lamborghini. That's a person. God! You people are... All right, Bears. Next, Bears.
What's your interpretation of the feedback you got from those guys as you guys try to figure things out?
Yeah, I think for us, it's just constant communication, you know, attention to detail, all the stuff that we stress, and then how do we keep communicating that player to coach, coach to player, so that we know we get the results that we're looking for on the field.
All right, well, that was Shane Waldron in sort of a hyper-speed press conference yesterday that went in a lot of different directions, and there was a lot of caffeine and a lot of sniffling and not quite sure where it ended. This segment is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. The play calling's one thing,
mm-hmm.
but when they talked about, well, the leadership council has convened, and then the door swings open, and the leadership council, there's the egress, and they take off their robes. I don't know exactly what's involved in the Bears leadership council.
Well, now I'm picturing the Council of Elrond.
But okay. like robes.
Is there a round table? Are there big, long, like pointy hats at the top of it?
Maybe, or like robes with cowls on them, and they cover their faces in darkness.
Only two of them have a big staff. You know, there's the two leaders who each have
big
staffs.
Dog. Yeah, the big dog has a big staff.
Right, he's got to.
They intone and they invoke and they say ancient runic prayers, and then they come up with a vellum scroll that is delivered to Shane Waldron with their requests on it. Or it's like Martin Luther's 95 Theses, and they nail it to the door of his office. And here's what Mercedes Lewis said about what they're trying to express.
Well, I think mainly just continue to be vocal about the things that he sees, and don't feel like you can't point guys out, you know, from the oldest guy in the room, being me, to the youngest guy. Like, don't feel like you can't, you know, coaches. I want to be coached. I want to be great. Like, this is not, you know, it's just not for play. You know what I mean? Like, this is our job. We understand that, you know, it's a high, stressful and production-based business, and we all got to be doing the same things or everybody gets fired, right? So ego is supposed to be left at the door, and that's what it's about. And, you know, he's very receptive to that. And I think, obviously, you know, coming in, we got a bunch of dudes, right, not just guys on the team or on this offense. We have dudes that have done it at a high level. And so sometimes as a coach coming in, you may, you know, be walking on eggshells, and I just kind of put that to bed. Like, it's not – nobody's sensitive in here. You know, we want to win games just as bad as you do, and it's a collaborative effort in everything. This is not Pop Warner. You know, this is – we work together side by side to get things done, and, yeah, that's really what my message was.
Who's singing?
Now we need to get down. Like, now we have a real question for the Bears.
I'm sorry. I was distracted.
Can we reconvene Shane Waldron and figure out who was singing while Mercedes Lewis was talking to the media?
Or maybe that's like the closing ceremony of the leadership council meeting, and he wasn't even done yet.
What exactly was he singing?
He wasn't done with the benediction to close. Yeah, that's part of the ancient chant of Cthulhu that finishes out the leadership meeting. But how about that, though? This isn't Pop Warner.
Oh, apparently it was Caleb. Okay. Apparently Grody said yesterday it was Caleb.
Yeah, all right.
Good. I like that. He's singing the I'm Comfy song.
Right. It's a theme song. Every time Caleb enters a room, that's the song that they play.
I like it. I love the
fact. More importantly, things that, you know, we know and that we feel comfy running.
Cool.
I love that Caleb says
the fact that he could just be wandering around singing, right. I think is great.
And he could use it. You know, don't worry about turning TVs off. Just keep yourself comfy.
When I do that everyone tells me to shut up.
We have a very musical house. Every once in a while, the wife and the son will join in. Sometimes they don't. But I love the message that Mercedes Lewis is delivering there. I don't love the fact that he needs to deliver it to his offensive coordinator. That concerns me. The Luke Getsy coming in as OC, when he came in and joined Matt Eberflus when he first arrived in Chicago a few seasons ago, he was a first-time NFL play caller, so that on-the-job training associated with that, there's some grace to be given there. Shane Waldron has done this gig before. It's year three for Matt Eberflus. It's at least the second time Shane Waldron's been an NFL play caller. They should be ready to manage this, ready to master this, ready to take charge of this, and That to me, there's a lot of really nice guys in the building right now. The message Mercedes Lewis is delivering right now is, I've been in this league for a long time. It's good to get along, but also that there has to be a level of demand, a level of command that is that the influence from the top needs to have the thumb on everyone and be willing to hold people to account. And, you know, I don't think Mercedes Lewis was being a jerk about it at all, but it's important for the brass to know that that's okay, too. Yeah, you brought us all in here to get along, but when it's not going well, it's okay to point that out.
And Mark Grody said that it's a good thing that this happened 3 games in and not 14 games in. That you actually have somebody say, hey, figure this out now. But how
it doesn't mean Shane Waldron is capable of being that dude, though.
I know, and it doesn't mean it's his nature.
Yeah.
But when they want to be coached harder, and to me it's just that it's separate from the play calling issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wasn't even thinking about this. I didn't ask about this, that there was something about how he's actually coaching when the rubber meets the road. I was just concerned about personnel groupings and what they're asking players to do. And now all of a sudden, like, wait, now that's what you talked about how he's coaching you?
So where I'm in betwixt at the moment a little bit, because I haven't met Shane Waldron, but I've heard enough about Shane Waldron where the concern I had, I'm confident I had to say this to you after they drafted Caleb at some point, was Shane Waldron's necessity to be the type of coach who's going to be demanding of details at quarterback, because the maturation of Caleb's game, not the maturation of his personality, his demeanor off the field or the fingernails or anything else, but Caleb's game maturing was largely going to be dependent upon having a coach that was going to be demanding of him. Now, to be fair, I'm seeing a version of Caleb that strikes me as having a coach who is detail-oriented. The mechanics of quarterback, I'm seeing things from the mechanics of Caleb as a quarterback that really encouraged me with early growth from what I saw in his college film. But the quote from Mercedes, the overall sort of discombobulation of the offense would indicate that Shane Waldron is not being enough of a taskmaster to the offense as a whole.
You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. I didn't think I'd feel this strongly about it as we got into this. This is a head coaching issue.
Yes.
This is a head coaching issue. When already your senior player is saying that their offensive coordinator isn't coaching them hard enough after three games, this is on the head coach, who when you hire a guy has to set a tone for how it's done and what his expectations are and what his standards are. The head coach is in charge. And I know the head coach loves to talk about defense and be a part of the defense and everything like that, but it is ultimately, it is the head coach's job. When you make that hire, you say, hey, you know, this guy's got kind of a quirky personality. Maybe he's a little high strung. He's a little nervous to him, and maybe he's going to figure it out. It's not up to Mercedes Lewis. First of all, Mercedes Lewis, stay on sides. Stop jumping off sides.
That'd be nice.
You know, I know you're the leader of everything, and you've been around the league forever.
He's got the big staff.
Yeah, stop taking penalties. Right. If you're going to be the grand leader, just don't jump off sides anymore. Yeah. But where's the? Why are we talking about the tight end of the offensive coordinator? Where's the head coach in this?
The way that Matt Eberflus runs this team, we've seen him cycle through a few different coaches at this point. Some, you know, he gets rid of Luke Getsy. Others, he has to move on from various reasons from during last season. The defense that's on film for the Bears looks like a defense that's coached hard. Now, it's also a defense that's got a lot of resources in it. It's a very talented defense, but they do play hard. You see the imprint of Matt Eberflus on the Bears' defense. Matt Eberflus' same philosophy, like the same HITS principle, that we haven't actually heard him utter that acronym very much so far this season, which, I mean, okay, whatever. But you see the HITS principle,
you know, we play on the HITS principle.
Yes. Thank you, Flus. You see it with the Bears' defense. You don't really see it with the Bears' offense. You don't see that same urgency. You don't see them attacking, not just attacking with a deep pass. You don't see them trying to
maul people.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't see that same type of fire, that same type of urgency. You don't see them in attack mode, snap by snap, with the way they play the game. That same HITS principle that just plays out all over the defense, you don't really see it with the offense. And yes, that falls on him as the head coach too.
I asked Matt Eberflus about his role when it comes to his vision filtering down through the entire team.
It's about coaching the coaches, you know, so I'm not able to be everywhere at one time, but I am able to have coaches that are really good at what they do and understand standards and how we want to get things done at their position. So we set those standards. We understand how we want to look you know, in terms of the drills, in terms of the teamwork, in terms of the after action, in terms of how we evaluate those things, in terms of the fundamental skill that I was talking about in that article. And that's at every position. So that's how you do it as a head football coach.
So if you're already having an issue with one of the coaches, where has the coaching the coaches been at this point? Where, if that's Eberflus's job to walk down the hall and say, Shane, get on their asses a little bit. They can take it.
Yep. Yep.
They can take it. Don't worry about it. You don't worry about them any fomenting any mutiny against you. I got you.
It's a lot of veterans.
You go do what we hired you to do.
It's a lot of veterans in that huddle. Yes, there's some youth also, but just like Mercedes Lewis is talking about, there's a lot of vets on that squad, and there's a lot of guys who've taken lumps with the Bears for a couple of seasons here trying to build toward this point. And, you know, you see phases of the game where it looks like it's supposed to look. And, you know, a bad play call is one thing, but you want a team that looks like they're the aggressor more often than not. And the Bears' offense just doesn't look like the aggressor very often. They look confused. They look like the prey more than the predator. You want them to be the one setting the tone, setting the tempo. At times, yes, that might mean we're going to be stubborn and do some things and punt the football away. But just managing all of this, managing the flow of the game itself, managing your coaching staff, it's year three for Flus. And it doesn't mean he's got to like slam the door behind him and get in the room and point his finger in Shane Waldron's face, but to be very direct and observational about where Waldron's influence needs to show up for this offense. That's a conversation that needs to happen, apparently.
Maybe Waldron has never had the autonomy he has now. I don't know what his relationship was like with Pete Carroll.
Right.
And very often with coaching staffs, there is the whole good cop, bad cop thing. And you end up with somebody at one level just kicking your ass and making you feel awful. And then you can go cry on the shoulder of somebody else. And so, hey, you know, he just wants the most out of you. That's all. He doesn't dislike you. Right. Like if he's yelling at you, it means he believes in you. It means he cares. Like
that's supposedly a strength of Matt Eberflus, to be able to coach a guy hard and not have him feel like you're angry at him or to get upset at you after he walks away. That is apparently, from everything I hear about him, a strength of Matt Eberflus.
It was always a huge strength of Lovie Smith. That Lovie was great at the parental side, especially with younger players. But what Mercedes Lewis is saying is we're past some of that.
Yeah.
We can take it. For him to say it's not Pop Warner, those are carefully chosen words.
Yeah.
And that's some shade. Make no mistake, it's not Pop Warner. We aren't little kids.
Yeah.
And maybe the Bears are just – and look, I've praised them for how nice they are. I think Ryan Poles is super nice. I really do. And from all accounts, Ian Cunningham's really nice. Matt Eberflus seems really nice. And football's not a nice game.
And when you have a rookie, number one overall pick quarterback with everything on the shoulders of Caleb Williams, then I think the communication with him, you kind of be careful about that. You be careful about how many voices are in his ears, how many cooks are in the kitchen, and all those types of things. With an offensive coordinator who's done this gig before in a pivotal year for your head coach and for your franchise in many ways, you don't need to tiptoe around it with Shane Waldron. He's got a big job in a big city, coaching an offense of a team with big expectations. And however many closed-door meetings need to happen, they need to happen so Waldron knows he is empowered to run this offense. Even his players are trying to ensure them that he is empowered to coach them hard, to be demanding of them. And whatever details, there's so many details that are apparently being missed with this offense, on the offensive line, at the receiver position, with the play calling, the situational awareness, all these different things are not coalescing for the Bears offense right now, and everyone's looking to Shane Waldron to figure out, how do you drive us to get this thing right? It's a lot of eyeballs on him.
The offense has been uncoordinated.
Yeah.
And he is, by definition, the coordinator. That is his job. His job is to get everything working correctly. And I was more concerned with the X's and O's. And now we're hearing there's an issue with the Jimmys and Joes. That they're like, hey, you can coach us. We're kind of, just go ahead. We're right here. We're listening. We want to get the best out of ourselves and what we can do. And you had Caleb saying, hey, he calls the plays.
And that's the thing. My main focus coming into this thing was, how demanding will Shane Waldron be of mechanics and timing with Caleb and pre-snap recognition and all these things that I've actually been very impressed with Caleb Williams. And I can't divorce Shane Waldron's role in that, because to me, that was the biggest area of growth that I was going to watch for Caleb early in his NFL career. And I think he's been really good in that regard three games in to his NFL career by comparison to what he was in college. So credit to Shane Waldron for that. The whole rest of the offense, though, there's a lot of ground to cover.
Before Chicago takes on L.A., tune in Sunday morning from 9 to noon for the Your Local Ford Dealers pregame show right here on 670 The Score, presented by Aurelio's and Sony Pictures' Wonderverse Chicago. Join Mully, Olin Krutz, and Patrick Manley. They'll get you set for the game. All of it can be heard on The Score and the Odyssey app. When we return, I'm kind of mad at the White Sox for making us have
everything.
To be...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but making us near TV. There was a very wry tweet last night, I thought. There was a dry and wry tweet that was sent out that I enjoyed specifically regarding
was it from Fraser Crane?
Tonight's game. No, but
was it Niles?
Somebody who
was it Daphne?
Somebody whose sense of humor would fit right in with
okay.
that.
All right.
Who you know well. It's next on The Score.
Sox a strike away. Getting the sweep. On the ground, right side. Mateo Cioriarte, and that'll do it. Ball game. For the third game in a row, the White Sox refuse to give in to history. And they sweep the Angels 7-0 in this three-game series. Now, we ain't taking that.
Okay. So, the Sox got some revenue out of it. They had bigger than normal crowds, so they keep it rolling.
Are they going to spend it on infrastructure? That additional revenue?
No, they're still losing money. Oh, okay. I don't think so. So I just found it interesting what this sets up now. That our friend Jason Benetti tweeted this last night. A win Friday night makes the Tigers a playoff team.
I saw that.
And just, did you see that?
Just left it at that.
Just left it at that. Just I'll leave this here. I found that really interesting. So that's what we have tonight. What time's first pitch?
Let's see.
I believe 5:25.
Oh, God. Well, you know what? That's not terrible then. That's not terrible because these dumbass White
540,
Sox.
540, excuse me. 540.
I was expecting them to get it out of the way. We get a nice Friday night. We can go, I don't know, whatever we're going to do. Go find some
clubbing.
Live. Yeah, I'm going clubbing. Yes. That's what I do.
All velour. Just head to toe velour.
That's what I do. Well, I've got Marshall Harris. Because Marshall has given us 5 of his 10 club rules.
Oh, yeah, I heard some of that. I was texting Marshall a little bit during that.
Yeah, we're halfway through the club rules, and he's also teased us with lounge/bar rules that are different. But until I'm fully schooled in the club rules, there's no clubbing for me.
Okay.
No clubbing for this guy. But no, I might.
Dimes beget dimes. I had to text him after that. I was like, you tell him, Marshall.
That's putting it out there. Loved that. So, no, I don't want to have to be in front of a television to watch the stupid-ass White Sox set a record. I had a friend text me yesterday, and he said, I'm at the Sox game. I said, what? Why are you at the Sox game? He said, because I was at the Polo Grounds in 1962 to see those Mets, and I felt I had to be here today to see this.
Full circle moment.
Yeah, I said, okay, I respect that. Like, that's somebody who appreciates a little baseball history and has, if you got nothing else to do, you get a ticket for $5 or whatever it is and go hang out, go ahead, man. But I want to see the history, too. I do. Because I want to, you know how they say, and they always, there's the famous stories about somebody loses in the World Series or the Super Bowl, or the NBA Finals, and they want to walk out there and watch the other team celebrate and see the confetti drop.
Yeah.
And know, so there's something about feeling the pain.
Yeah, you want that feeling singed into your brain.
There's something about if you've spent any bit of your emotional capital anywhere in your life on caring about the Sox, I feel. If I spontaneously burst into tears in 2005 when they won the World Series, then I have to watch them set this record.
Huh.
I have to.
To get both ends of that spectrum?
I have to. Like, I owe it to myself. I owe it to like, the little kid me staying up with a transistor radio to listen at night in bed despite not being allowed to stay up to hear what Richie Zisk and Chet Lemon and Lamar Johnson and Francisco Barrios and Bill Naharodny were doing because I cared. I don't know why. It wasn't thrust upon me. I wasn't told to be a Sox fan. I wouldn't know. No example was set for me. I just found them because they were cool and they were countercultural and Cubs fans didn't like them. And I'm like, okay, this is the punk rock team. All right, this is the team. And I would ask my parents, can we go to a Sox game? No. We're not going. Are you kidding? We're not going to a Sox game. I'm taking you. No, we're not going out to the South Side. And then my uncle, who grew up in South Shore, went to South Shore High School, grew up a Sox fan. He's like, what are you talking about? I'll take him. And he would take me to Sox games. And I'm like, oh, this is where it's at. So that kid has got to confront the fact that that kid ended up as somebody who spent a long time rooting for what is now one of the worst teams in all of professional sports. And I got to sear that into my soul.
Now, is this more just almost logistical for you just kind of to check that box? Or is there still a level of passion that's there? Is there still
I don't
care?
Know.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't, whatever it is dormant.
Because my initial reaction was, that seems to indicate you do still care. You're emoting about the team in some way, even wanting that negative emotion when you've had the positive to such a deep extent previously.
I can't change the reality of my young life as a fan. I can't change it. And, you know, I still have my childhood friend Sox group chat. That has become something other than and much more than that over these years. But I don't know is the answer. Maybe not. Maybe sometime somewhere, or it's like just it's a like freeze dried or dormant, or like with a like the lungfish that buries itself in the caked mud and has some sort of suspended animation before the floods return. I don't know.
Or Ted Williams' head?
Yes, yeah. but that's not going well.
Is it not?
Did we ever get an update on that?
I'd love an update on Ted Williams' head.
Remember, they said it stuck to a can or something.
I hope they did Teddy better than that.
No, there was a whole expose that it was all
a
it
can?
Was all yeah
a
it was
can of what
I don't know, like tuna or something. It was all a scam, and they basically threw him in a chest freezer with the pork chops.
It should at least be a can of peas, peas are going to stay cold. That's the thing. Some kind of can of frozen veggies.
Look it up. Something happened where they investigated the cryogenic, whatever it is, Cryo Larry's super freezer
a can
world.
Of tuna isn't going to freeze a can of corn.
I remember that or it was sitting out somewhere
in
a cold room. But yeah, I don't think Ted's coming back anytime soon.
Search? Ted Williams' head?
Yes.
That's probably not good to search on a work computer.
Yeah, maybe just use your phone or something.
I want to do that on my phone. let me see.
Go to incognito mode.
That's probably a good idea.
Right?
I mean, I guess this ain't my computer. We'll probably be fine.
But I guess I would love to hear the Jason Benetti call, which I guarantee you is going to be devoid of shade or bitterness. And it's going to be nothing but excitement for the resurgent and surprising Detroit Tigers.
No shade or bitterness.
Oh, rest. I mean, you won't detect it in the call. Right, yeah. I'm not saying it's not going to be there, but
it'll exist.
There's nothing
hear it.
Right. It will not be evinced by his perfectly professional call. I predict. No, it's not Cryo Willie's freezer barn. It was something like that, though. It was like the Mega Freezatorium, Cryotastic Megarama. They put his head on a spike outside, like Vlad the Impaler. Oh, ow. Today, the Cubs begin their final series of the season when they host the Reds at Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage starts at 12:45, with first pitch at 1:20 on the Southwest Airlines Cubs Radio Network. And while we were giving Anthony Herron a lesson in the various hard rock white people subgenres, two Americas, we are going to give away a pair of tickets to see Deftones, which I would categorize as alt metal, probably.
A little bit of prog in there.
Prog art, alt metal. With special guests The Mars Volta and Fleshwater at the United Center on March 31st. You got to be listening if you want to win. Next up, we're going to be joined by Rams radio play-by-play announcer J.B. Long. He's Anthony Herron. I'm Dan Bernstein, and you have the score.